welcome to Dear Hank and John, or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank. It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. Although in this case, it's a very special episode, and there's only one brother. That's right, it's a one-man band spectacular. The rarest and also lowest quality variety of Dear Hank and John episode. We're trying things a little differently today. I'm going to, insofar as possible, do this live. It is the end of 2022. It is a time for experimentation and rebirth and growth. And also, my brother is unavailable because he is the busiest person I have ever known. I don't know how he does it all. And then some weeks, he doesn't. He isn't able to do it all. And in those weeks, I'm like, well, at least he's human. So we're going to try our best to get through this together. I do have some questions identified that you have sent me at hankandjohn@gmail.com, which I very much appreciate. Also, lots of you have sent me emails that aren't questions, which have also been lovely. We're going to begin today with a question about Hank, my brother. Since he's not here, I feel like there's never been a better time to discuss him. This question comes from Angela, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, last night, I dreamt that during his college days, Hank programmed a desktop app of a stick figure named Little Stimulus, or Lil Stim for short." Lil Stim is a pretty good rap name. Slightly off topic, but I feel like Lil Stim wouldn't be in my like top 10 YouTube music listens, but might be in my top 30. Anyway, Lil Stim was a program where this little stick figure would mosh to any music being played on your computer. Unfortunately, Hank could no longer remember the code of the file, and the original hard copy was being held hostage by your uncle. John eventually got the disc back. Thank you, Angela, for making me the hero of your dream. And also discovered that your uncle had been woefully underpaying you all these years for Lil Stim, presumably. Now, this is a great question, Angela, particularly because it contains no question marks. My friend Amy Cross Rosenthal used to say that nothing was more boring than other people's dreams. And that's really true, except when other people's dreams are about you. And then suddenly you perk up and you're like, oh, what now? That sounds like a really interesting metaphor. I wonder what that could be about. It's probably about how great I am and how I'm always saving the day for Hank, coming through at the last second with the disc that contains the hit web application Lil Stim. And so thank you, Angela, for that really interesting dream. I have to say, if that dream was about someone other than me, I think I would still like it. But like, of course, I think I would. By the way, if you hear an extremely loud clunking that appears to be coming from above, I want you to know that it is an extremely loud clunking coming from above. I recorded my basement and my son broke his foot. And so he has a cast. And he's always been a bit of a heavy stepper. But with this cast, you may hear it. So the main thing that I thought about with regards to your dream is two things. That's an example of not needing to edit every time you make a mistake. The main thing is two things, Angela. The first main thing is that this is all so in character, right? Like Hank making a program called Lil Stim in college is very in character. That program becoming unexpectedly and inexplicably popular is very in character. And then, like, it somehow making a bunch of money, even though Hank doesn't care that much about money, is very in character. Also, I think it's very in character that I came and saved the day at the end. But the second thing it makes me think is, which uncle? Which uncle, Angela? Which uncle was woefully underpaying us all these years? There's two main candidates. First, we have my Uncle Bill. Oh, God, I love my uncle. I love all of my uncles, for the record. And then we have my Uncle Mike. They're both great, wonderful fathers and husbands and grandfathers. They're both talented business people, so there's no reason why they couldn't, for instance, take Lil Stim and turn it into a bunch of money somehow. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, it's not a biological uncle, is it? It's like an uncle figure who we call uncle, like good old Uncle Joe, always looking out for us in the business realm where we don't really, you know, have a lot of talent or particular aptitude. Thank God for good old Uncle Joe. And so it's a metaphorical uncle, isn't it, Angela? And then I was like, who's the metaphorical uncle who's been underpaying us all these years? And Angela, I don't know who it is. I think you might have to have another dream. I think you might need to be in an inception situation where you have a second dream, report back to us on who. Oh, Hank says, I would love to record if you still can. Amazing. What, guys, it's going from a one-man band episode to a two-person band episode. All right. Incredible news, everybody.
And welcome.
No, I'm already, Hank, we're already in. It's already started.
I know. I don't know how else to do this, John.
Hank is here. He sent me an unexpected text message saying, I'd like to record the podcast with you now. And I was like, but your team informed me that you,
John,
wouldn't be available for a podcast.
Do you want to know something that's kind of gross?
Yeah.
I wasn't recording the podcast and I was like, I'd really like to talk to my brother.
Yeah. So you weren't actually thinking I'd like to record the podcast. You were thinking like, how can I talk to John about some stuff that's important to me? And then you were like, oh God, are we supposed to record the podcast right now?
No, I was, well, one of the things, I don't know what you've been up to, but like,
yeah,
there's a year coming. There's like a world changing. There's a lot.
Yeah.
There's, I don't know if this, maybe it has always and will always feel like this. It just feels like,
yeah,
there's a lot that's changing and a lot that's hard. And
uh-huh.
And I did, and I was thinking about how I'd like to talk about it with you and
great,
and also answer questions from our listeners if you're doing that. But
yeah, we are doing that.
Okay.
So real quick, Hank, I just need to bring you up to date on how things have been going so far.
Okay.
I'm actually recording a live show while I'm recording the podcast with
you. You don't record live shows. Are you actually live?
Okay. I'm streaming a live show while I'm recording the podcast,
okay,
with you. I don't understand how this stuff works. But they're all really mad that they can't hear you.
Yeah.
But the reason they can't hear you is because this is a one-man band episode of Dear Hank and John, where a second member of the band unexpectedly entered halfway through.
That's my
It's
band.
Like...
I play.
It's like I'm Huey Lewis and I think I'm playing a solo acoustic show, you know, hearkening back to the old days when it was just me and a guitar.
And then the drummer then just shows up and is like,
exactly. Who should come but the news?
Yeah.
And suddenly it's Huey Lewis and the news. The news is here. The whole band is back together.
Oh, man.
So
let's
this
not
is
do the
really
news,
thrilling
though,
for me.
Like, if we're going to make the metaphor into a real thing,
yeah,
I'd rather avoid it.
Huey Lewis in the news?
No, I don't want to do anything that's in the news right now.
Oh, you just don't want to discuss the news. I feel like the news has been really good lately. Argentina won the World Cup. If there's other news, I'm literally unaware of it.
I gotta tell you, that was nuts.
I think it's great that so many people really enjoyed the World Cup final.
I don't know
it
if
was
I would
a great
say
game.
That I enjoyed it, but
it was very stressful.
It was an experience.
It was amazing. It was an experience. And there is something magical about the fact that, you know, in the neighborhood of one third of all humans were watching the same thing at the same time, participating in the
emotions. I feel like
it's the greatest shared emotional experience among humans,
oof,
the World Cup.
You know,
and
what
it was
I
very
really,
intense.
Can I tell you something I really appreciated about the World Cup?
Yes.
Is when the announcers were like, yes, that was the correct decisions by the officials, because I had idea. I was like,
I
don't know that. I don't like, was that right? But they all seemed to think it was, I've appreciated that effect because that mattered. Like those things mattered a lot. Turns out.
Yep.
The decisions
indeed.
Made by the officials.
I would just like to say for the record that if you enjoyed the World Cup final, wait until you find out about fourth tier English football. If you thought Morocco's upset was headline news,
yeah,
wait until you find out about AFC Wimbledon taking on Charlton Athletic. Okay? the World Cup was great, but you know what result you never saw once in the entire World Cup, 64 games, and you did not see this result once? match abandoned due to frozen pitch, which is what happened to AFC Wimbledon this week. Not a single match in the entire World Cup was abandoned because of frozen pitch. And we've had it happen 40 or 50 times just in the last week in English football.
What's the,
so,
what's the concern with a frozen pitch? Is it that you don't want to like hit it? It's like playing on concrete?
I've never totally understood why frozen pitch and waterlogged pitch are the two kind of, I would say, like, leading protagonists. They're sort of the Mbappe and Messi of fourth-tier English football. And I've never quite understood why they're given such centrality. It's a team game, you know? Like, a lot of things matter. But pitch gets a lot of frozen. It's just a big deal. The energy is so much different now that you're here.
I bet. I've done one-man band podcasts as well, and it's interesting. It's a different dynamic. It's kind of hard to be that person. I don't know.
It's beautiful to have you with
me. Can you tell me what the emotion I experienced during the World Cup was?
I mean, here's the thing, Hank. That's the emotion I feel every Saturday. So you're starting to glimpse. Hank is on a journey of meaning. And part of his journey of meaning is that he's starting to glimpse that football contains all of the human emotions and all of the human experiences. And that it rewards your attention, unlike so many other things, it rewards your attention in exact, what is it called, correlation?
Yeah.
Like to the size of your feelings is exactly correlated to the size of your attention and investment.
The first time you like drink like a bunch of cold water on an empty stomach in your life, you're like, my stomach can feel cold. That's what watching that game felt like. It was like, I have experienced a new sense. I'm 42 years old. And for the, it's been a while since I had a new feeling. This one's new.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. Hey,
I don't know that I liked it though.
Yeah. I'll get you an iFollow membership and then you can have it every Saturday while you watch AFC Wimbledon. I forced my kids to watch the penalty shootout, and at one point I said, this is unbearable. And Henry said, that's how I feel all the time watching soccer. All right. Hank, we got to get to some questions from our listeners, okay? Because there is one question. There's really only two questions I want to answer in this episode. Mm-hmm. But one of them is maybe, I don't want to overhype it, the greatest question I've ever come across in the history of Dear Hank and John.
Okay.
And you missed a whole conversation about Lil Stim, but this
I saw that question.
This question from Grace is unbelievable.
Okay.
Dear John and Hank, I really like country music. But there's this one song that's been haunting my dreams. It's called 5'9". Now, I have also heard this song. It's a hit. It's on radio. And it has, I agree with Grace, it has the weirdest chorus that has never been addressed so far as I know. This is a country song. I don't know how familiar you are with like contemporary country music, Hank, but like a lot of contemporary country music sort of grounds itself in vivid images that are slightly like seen through a like a rose-tinted filter of nostalgia, you know, like finding ways to take rural life and make it at once like hyper-specific and universal. Yeah. Like the best swing is a tire swing, is a kind of, you know, or like the best car is a pickup truck and the best kind of road is a dirt road and so on. Okay, so there's this one song that's been haunting my dreams. It's called 5'9", and I think the chorus goes, God made 5'9" brown eyes in a sundress. Now, there seem to be some people who think that the chorus is God made 5'9" brown eyes and a sundress, but I have listened to the song several times since reading this question, and I think that you can certainly make a case for 5'9" brown eyes in a sundress. Uh-huh. But either way, there's actually the same problem. Grace says, I can't get this terrifying image out of my head. My question is, if 5'9" brown eyes were to wear a sundress, how would that sundress stay up? Eyes are round, so could straps hold it? Would it need some kind of anti-slip material used for strapless dresses? You guys answered the question about a person made of lemons so well that I thought you could surely handle this one. Bonus if a listener can draw this monstrosity. I'm all about that. Grace, no treble.
Nice.
It's a great name specific sign off.
So of course
I keep having to turn myself down because being in your company is making me so excited
so
compared to the experience I thought I was going to have. So I apologize to Tuna and everyone listening if my levels keep changing a little bit, but I'm trying not to bottom out.
I of course went to the website genius.com, which is where you learn about the interpretation of lyrics. But there is no information. The only information I've learned is that this man's wife is in fact 5'10", but he didn't realize that when he wrote the song.
Wow!
And then he had to, and it was too late to correct it.
So he played the song for his wife for the first time, and she listened to it.
About?
And then at the end of it, he was like, well, "What do you think?" And she was like, "Oh, I mean, I thought it was all right. Forget about how tall I am." I would be like, I don't want to be overly critical. And I know that you're like in your creative mode and that you're very vulnerable in that time and everything, but how can an eyeball be 5'9" tall?
And then this is like the
more
second...
to the point.
Okay.
More to the point, how could this 5'9" eyeball wear a sundress? Because almost by definition, wouldn't that sundress cover up the seeing part of the eye? And kind of the one thing that the 5'9" eyeball could be good at is taken away from it.
Well, John, you have so two things. First, this is not the first time, maybe this month, that we have talked about giant eyeballs. Because you talked about that poem that you like.
Oh, yeah.
It's just you visualize it as an eyeball rolling around the forest collecting dirt and bark on it.
I've learned a lot more about the transparent eyeball since last we spoke.
Okay. But you also need to remember that it's 5'9" brown eyes in a sundress.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know,
if
there's two of them in there.
They're stacked on top of each other. They have to be, right? How else are they going to be 5'9" tall, Hank? Be reasonable.
Well, the problem is that they're balls, so they are spherical. And so if they're 5'9" high, and there's two of them.
They're five feet nine wide.
Well, no, they're 10'18" wide.
Oh, you're imagining that they're...
Two eyeballs.
You're imagining that they're right next to each other.
Yeah. Well, that's how eyes are.
Well, first off... eyes aren't 5'9" tall in a sundress, at least not any eyes I've ever seen. But I was imagining that they're stacked on top of each other.
I guess I could see
like
that.
Two kids in a trench coat acting like an adult.
No one takes us seriously if we're just walking around like ourselves. When we're like two and a half feet-ish tall.
Yeah, exactly. If they're just a 2.5 foot tall eyeball walking around next to another 2.5 foot tall eyeball, seeing that in a sundress is very disorienting. But if you see a 5'9" tall two eyeball situation in a sundress, you're like, one of the eyeballs I don't even see. It's under
right.
the sundress.
It's got a very narrow waist. Where they come together.
actually, it's very close to the platonic ideal. Of
real hourglass shape there, literally, where it's just like
the rare hourglass body that is actually hourglass shaped.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot to unpack here.
Does the bottom one roll like BB-8 and the top one stays stable?
Right. Do they have feet? This was a big question about Emerson's transparent eyeball, actually, which is this idea that the philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson, philosopher/writer Ralph Waldo Emerson, had in his essay Nature, where he talks about walking through the forest and just wanting to be an eyeball. Can I read you the relevant part, Hank? Because I think it does impact our discussion of this popular song. We return to reason and faith. There, I feel that nothing can befall me, no disgrace, no calamity, leaving me my eyes, which which nature cannot repair. Standing on the bare ground, my head bathed by the blithe air and uplifted into infinite spaces. Jesus Christ, Ralph Waldo Emerson loved an adjective.
That's a bit much, but okay.
My head bathed by the blithe air, all mean egotism vanishes. I become a transparent eyeball. I am nothing. I see all. The currents of the universal being circulate through me. I am part or particle of God. And so the idea is that, like, instead of reflecting back meaning, that you just soak it in. That, you know, instead of take in nature rather than trying to reflect it or make meaning of it or whatever.
I like the transparent eyeball part, but you can't just use the word blithe.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Nor can you describe egotism as mean. You should just say egotism, right? We know what you mean. And then there's the fact that when
I thought
this
it
has
was
been
average.
Drawn.
I thought he meant like the mean, like the average.
Oh, I don't think so. But again, why did he introduce that ambiguity needlessly? Yeah. We're not here to criticize Ralph Waldo Emerson's prose, which is frankly better than either of ours. We're here to talk about the fact that the most famous image of this, and I need you to Google it, Hank. I need you to Google transparent eyeball, was made by Christopher Pierce Cranch in the 1830s. And it pictures an eyeball atop a very long set of legs. And the eyeball is like wearing a straw hat of some kind.
Yeah,
and
coat also with
the
tails.
Legs. Yeah, the legs are wearing, it's a coat with tails. So like this is a dressed up transparent eyeball walking through the wilderness in what amounts to a tuxedo.
This is
but
not,
it doesn't have
by
a
the
head.
Way, anatomically correct. Like I don't, like if that's the optic nerve that it's walking on, if its legs have turned into the optic nerve, it's coming out the wrong part of the eyeball.
Well, first off, I don't think that that's the concept. The point is, we do have an image, thanks to Christopher Pierce Cranch, of 5'9" brown eyeballs in a coat.
Oh, I see. We got to it.
Right. I think that we're on the path looking at this image together.
So maybe it's two eyes.
Yeah.
That are just bit like there's no head, but there is kind of a. So there is a real legitimate biological question about where the eye ends. You can make the case that the eye is in fact just part of the brain. So like that, you know, it's very closely connected. The optic nerve does, you know, like there's processing that goes on before and after it. And so it's, you know, where you draw the line for the brain. So you can kind of maybe make the case that like you can lump in some nervous tissue with the eye, in which case you have two eyes with two stalks coming down, and maybe they like braid together a little bit before branching out again. And then that's like, you could have legs. You could have like a whole body.
Maybe you don't have legs, but maybe you just have sort of a pogo stick that is your optic nerve
and
related materials.
There's two
right,
eyes.
But they kind of intertwine.
But then at the end, they can break apart, so you can have legs. I don't see why not.
But why do you need legs?
Because I like this image that you've shown me. I wanted to be walking around.
All right. But I'm just going to tell you that if we have two legs and a 5'9" eyeball, we are a pair of eyeballs, actually. I worry that we are journeying away from Emerson toward Mike Wazowski. And that's a concern to me.
Well, that's what I think.
Because I don't think this country song is about Mike Wazowski, except with brown eyes.
I think that the author of this poem that is this country music song wants us to picture something that is in vaguely the form of a woman, but is made out of eyeballs. And so I think it has to be a little bit like not Mike Wazowski shaped. I think it has to be more like the image you've shown me here, where there's like legs. But it's wearing a sundress, but then there's no face, no head, just eyeballs.
Right. Okay. All right. I think we're there. I think we've settled on a description. But unfortunately, there is another critical level to this lyric.
Oh no.
Which is not that Emerson or Hank or John or this country musician made 5'9" brown eyes in a sundress, but that God did. This is a theological statement that God.
Oh, I didn't notice that part of the chorus.
5'9" brown eyes in a sundress, that for me is the biggest surprise, because, I feel like I've been around for a while. I'm 45 years old, and I'll tell you one thing that I've never seen on God's green earth. 5'9" brown eyes in a sundress.
God, it really does make it sound like the eyes themselves are 5'9", and that including the optic nerve is a stretch. But look, I don't know how this man
We'd have to consult with him to understand the full authorial intent. But as you know, Hank, I believe that books and art and country songs all belong to their readers or listeners. And so the meaning is there for us
to make.
Right.
So, but like, I mean, who else made it?
That's a really good point.
That doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah.
Like, and then he, at the end of the chorus, he says, God makes the good stuff. So he
God makes the good stuff.
Which is maybe the part I have the most trouble with.
That's a weird way to settle the problem of evil in the world, but I kind of like it. It's very simple and straightforward.
Right.
It's like, oh no, God just makes the good stuff.
Well,
like
but it
5 foot 9 inch tall, brown eyes and a sundress.
It retroactively applies to the eyes, which that's not my first sense, and I don't want to judge.
Right. But
it's different enough that I think I would be worried about its good or evilness.
If I saw 2 3-foot tall brown eyes in a trench coat in a sundress, I'm not sure I would, my first reaction would be, now that's the good stuff.
but we've been told. We know that it is.
You mean God does make the good stuff. That's the good stuff right there. You're welcome. You're welcome, God says. All this trial and travail, but you know, I did give you 5'9" John, you inch brown eyes and a sundress.
You know what I'd like to do? And I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull this off.
Okay.
Because I got a lot to do before the Christmas break, which we're recording before that. I'd like to record a version of this song having never heard it.
That's a great idea. Can you just, I mean, is it crazy to try to do it now? Just workshop it with me?
Well, I don't know what the rhyme scheme is yet. I have not looked at it at all. Jack makes good whiskey. Yeah. Red dirt makes
Jack makes good whiskey.
Good riding roads.
Yep.
Country makes good music for kicking up dust in the taillight glow. Okay. I'm getting the flow here. Dry wood makes good fires. Good years makes good swings. Ooh. Nice, because his tires. I thought it was going to be tires.
It's clever. See, there's an inversion of expectation.
And that's all good. And that's all good. But for me, God makes 5'9" brown eyes in a sundress. Loves
that's
Tim
good.
McGraw in a small town accent. Ain't no way that me and this truck made her fall in love. Jack makes good whiskey, but God makes the good stuff.
I before you go on, Hank, can I just point out a couple things about the lyrics of this song that I find completely fascinating? First, the lyrics talk about loving Tim McGraw and a small town accent, and that used to be called a southern accent, but now I think country music is trying to be inclusive of people who live north of the Mason-Dixon line, but still
well, we love it out here in Montana.
Right. And so do we in Indiana, rural Indiana, country music's blasting everywhere. And so that's an interesting shift, right? Away from a sort of regionalism toward identifying based on your proximity to an urban center.
Yes, correct.
That's an interesting cultural shift. And then the other thing I want to call attention to, Hank, is that this is a pretty short song. And yet there's two different kinds of road surfaces in this song.
I mean, there's a lot. You can learn a lot from there's a lot of different kinds of road surfaces, John. It's a big part of life.
We've got, like, I feel like if you gave this song to ChatGPT, ChatGPT would be like, interesting. I've just learned something new about humans. They're very intrigued by their road surfaces.
There are three things that people care about: large eyes, road surfaces.
And pickup trucks.
Well, I don't know. God, I think the third thing might be God.
New concept. 5'9" is the only thing that travels from Earth to an alien civilization. They're going to be so confident. They're going to like come visit Earth and they're going to be like, well, that's a surprise. And we'll be like, what? And they'll be like, well, first off, that you have bodies. So we were pretty sure that you were all 5 feet 9 inches tall.
And just eyeballs.
And just eyeballs in sundresses. So this is magnificent.
What's the other road surface? I can't find it.
Red dirt makes for good riding roads. That's red dirt roads. And then later in the song, when I pull up in the gravel drive, the way she dances with the raindrops, like she's the reason why they fall from the sky. And I thank him every time I close my eyes.
That's Emerson.
No. Emerson can't close his eye, Hank. He's a transparent eyeball. There's no blinking. There's no blinking allowed.
The thing about the drawing of the eyeball in the suit coat is that the eyeball is supposed to be invisible. It's a transparent eyeball. I think that this man, whose name is Tyler Hubbard, was imagining an invisible set of 5 foot nine eyeballs. Oh. They're transparent. You can't see them. It's just a sundress that moves around.
Is like a ghost sundress.
Yeah.
That's, I think we got there. Tyler Hubbard was taking Emerson's transparent eye deep into his heart.
Yeah.
And what came out was Emerson's transparent eye wearing a sundress, but the eye is transparent.
But there are two of them, and the bottom one rolls around like BB-8, but you can't see it.
Done.
Okay.
Thanks for potting with me. It's been a pleasure.
John, this podcast was brought to you by the line, Jack makes good whiskey, but God loves the good stuff. It's one of the lines of the song.
Today's podcast, of course, was also brought to you by Goodyear's Make Good Swings, an unexpected anti-rhyme.
And this podcast is also brought to you by the way she dances with the raindrops, like she's the reason why they fall from the sky. Actually, I think that's quite nice.
Yeah, it's not bad. And of course, today's podcast is brought to you by 5 foot nine brown eyes in a sundress. 5 foot nine brown eyes in a sundress. Transparent, so it's not weird.
It's just a ghost.
It's just a mobile sundress as far as you can see.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Blue Land. The inside of your toilet is gross, and that's why you shouldn't let anyone in your household drink out of it, including your dogs, please. Let them drink out of the bowl. The toilet is where the poop goes. There is an easy way to clean your toilet, though. Blue Land's sustainable toilet cleaner tablet. Just drop it in, watch it fizz, brush it up, and then flush. It's super easy, and the great thing about Blue Land is they are figuring out how to do all this stuff without any plastic at all. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and with the same powerful clean that you're used to. It uses no single-use plastics in any component, from bottles, tablets, to wrappers, and even to shipping. The tablet packaging, by the way, is fully compostable. Blue Land products are effective and affordable. The toilet tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, limescale, and hard water. And look, when it comes to me, I don't really care that much about bacteria in the toilet, because again, that's where the poop goes. That's where it's supposed to be dirty in there. But it is nice to have something to help you with those mineral deposits, which we have in abundance in Montana. You can get even more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Their subscriptions are customizable and convenient, so you never run out of your most used products. We have been a Blue Land household for like 3 years now. It's super convenient, super good. Like it a lot. The products look nice. They're easy to use. And again, they do not require single-use plastics or shipping a bunch of water around, because it's like the stuff that's going to be in the water, you can just dissolve it in water yourself instead of having the companies ship water from place to place. Why are we doing this? Never do I think to myself, oh, this is less effective than other cleaning products. It's just not. It's effective, it's easy, and it's affordable. Blue Land has a special offer right now for our listeners. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You don't want to miss out, everybody. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now, or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options
than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank.
So I'm so glad I showed up today, John, so that I could provide this level of insight into our future as we head into 2023 in collaboration with both time and space and our own bodies.
I really love your new emphasis on collaborating with time and space and your body.
I do. This is how I feel.
I think it's beautiful.
I'm trying to imagine it, even as I lie on the floor of my bathroom with food poisoning.
So, Hank, that's your big goal for 2023. And I talked jokingly in the last episode about my big goals for 2023, but I do have some serious goals as well.
Okay.
I would like to get off of the parts of the social internet that are really, really bad for me. And I know they're bad for me. And I think they're also probably bad for the social order, but that's irrelevant because they're bad for me.
Yeah.
But I can't stop using them. I would like to stop using the things that are clearly making my life worse. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
You go.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe I thought I had one, but I guess I don't.
Oh, you were so confident. The other thing I really want to do in 2023 is go to Sierra Leone. I really want to see the progress that's happened over the last 3.5 years since we've been working with Partners in Health to radically reduce maternal mortality in Sierra Leone. I'm really excited to see the changes that are happening there. So hopefully I'll get to go this year.
That's so exciting. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I've still never gotten to go.
Well, we'd love to have you.
Yes, I'm sure. I hope that you get to show lots of important people around. I want to know, do you have any feeling of confidence of a thing about the next year that you think might happen that people would be surprised by?
Like a prediction?
Yeah.
You want my unexpected hot take prediction for 2023?
Sure.
This is piping hot.
Okay.
I think at the end of 2023, Elon Musk will be the CEO of Twitter.
Wow. That's an interesting one. So like he will be un-CEO, but then he will re-CEO?
I don't even know if he's going to un-CEO, but I think that he will be the CEO of a much diminished Twitter. Like MySpace Tom overseeing his empire of empty accounts. I think that he will be the CEO of Twitter. I know MySpace Tom sold MySpace and is now just living the dream. But yeah. I'm trying to make a point here, people. That's what I think. That I was just trying to think of what would be the spiciest take I could have. You and that have feels a, very spicy.
You want to take a risky one that's going to look really amazing if you get it right.
Yeah, and then if I get it wrong, it'll just be like, whatever. I love taking a risk with my takes. Okay, what's yours?
I think we're going to be on Mars, but no. we got it. We're going to get there. So I think it makes sense that our thoughts on this are going to be based in the parts of the world that we spend so much time and that are sort of our homes in a weird way, which is the social internet. And so my sort of social internet take is that this is this will sort of like feel as if it were the last year of TikTok's dominance, like 2022 was. And now there are so many headwinds, and there will start to be a kind of like, you know, larger scale understanding that this is like a little bit less cool than it once was. And maybe the new cool thing will start to be seen. And in general, that the cohesion of the social internet, where there was a sense that there was Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook, like that cohesion will continue to fracture. And there will be more and more places where people spend time. And ultimately, I think that might be healthy. where there are different places for folks instead of everybody trying to occupy the exact same space as each other.
Yeah, because then in some ways it becomes a battle for territory within the limited space that is Twitter discourse or that is Reddit discourse instead of becoming a place for conversation. Like the internet places that I'm most drawn to at the moment are places that are well moderated and that encourage and reward and incentivize kindness and a hermeneutic of generosity, like mm-hmm. a way of looking at others and assuming the best in them. And the places that I am drawn to but that make me less happy are the places where everybody's fighting to own the space.
Yeah, to win. I think I think that everybody who sort of looks at a space, any space, but, you know, we're thinking about the internet right now, who looks at it in an internet space and thinks, you know, we must win over them and or we are losing.
Yeah.
I think that everybody who looks at it through those that lens, and I think that there's currently somebody who's owning Twitter who looks at it that way, is really wrong about how progress gets made and about how humanity moves forward. Because I don't think that much was ever accomplished through winning. I think that almost everything good has been accomplished through working together.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's
like winning is like such an opposite thing to working together. Like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Winning is much more narratively compelling. But yeah. When you look at what actually made change, it's almost always people working together. The whole idea that held the world back for so, so long was that for me to have more, you must have less. For, you know, that in order for one community, the way for one community to thrive is to take another community's resources through looting and pillaging and carving up space, winning territory, those kinds of straightforward, simple ways of thinking about resource allocation. And that is, of course, the wrong way. And the way that almost universally we've grown as a species is through collaboration and cooperation. That said, I don't see those places on the internet yet. Like, I see them in little ways. I see them in Nerdvitaria. I see them in certain Discord communities. I see them in mm-hmm. certain subreddits. But I don't see them in the kind of internet mainstream. And I do worry sometimes that we're so extremely online that
yeah, we don't see it as much because, well, the thing is,
our internet is different.
Yeah. Whenever your internet is bigger, the number of, like, if there is some edge of the bell curve who is just like, you know, 10 people who are going to figure out how to interpret your words in the worst possible light, they will.
Right.
And you will see all 10 of those people. And then,
yeah.
And, you know, and then they can make that case and like, convince others of that or whatever.
Yeah.
But I have started to see signs that you know, there are ways in which that's starting to feel a little cringy for folks. Like there's, I think Rebecca Jennings had a piece on how all of the worst discourse kind of has the same flavor. And once
yeah,
you
she
can-
she mentioned me in it.
once you can smell it, you know the smell. And you're like,
yeah.
Oh, I don't like that smell.
Right. Right. And, but you have to be exposed to a lot of it to know the smell. And I guess my right. worry is that there's a huge percentage of the internet that
still
is, so different from
it.
Our internet. It has yeah. not developed that sense of smell yet.
Yeah. Yeah. But I see signs that we kind of are moving away from that a little bit, but it's very hard to know for sure.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, here's hoping that in 2023, the internet gets not worse. And here is also hoping that the world gets better. The other thing that 2023 could very well be, if we do a good job of working together, is the last year in human history when more than 5 million children die before the age of 5.
Wow.
So that would represent some serious progress. But we need to get down to a world where fewer than a million children die before the age of five every year. And we can do that easily with existing technologies if we just distribute resources better. So yeah. Here at the end of the year, Hank, I'm very grateful to you for supporting PIH and other organizations that are working to bring about that world, and also to everybody in our community who does, whether through the Awesome Socks Club, the Awesome Coffee Club, or just direct donations at PIH.org/HankandJohn, or wherever you are seeking to decrease the overall worldwide level of suck.
Or the Project for Awesome, which is coming up. I'm very excited.
It'll be in February.
I got a countdown on my phone going so I can see how far away we are from the Project for Awesome.
It's going to be fun this year.
Yeah, for sure.
So here at the end of the year, we're going to skip the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, not least because the news from AFC Wimbledon is all about frozen pitches, and just say thank you.
If you want to send us an email, we're at hankandjohn@gmail.com. Oh, and if you haven't filled out the survey, you can do that. The Nerdfighteria Census for 2022 is out, and you can find a link to it on the Vlogbrothers channel if you want to check that out. I don't know what it is exactly, but go and click and tell us
what's
up.
Can just Google it.
I don't know if you can, but if you go to the Vlogbrothers channel,
well,
it's linked on one of my videos.
We believe in you.
Or on the community tab. And if you want to send us an email or at hankandjohn@gmail.com, we can answer your question. Sorry we didn't get to a lot today. I don't know how many you did before I got here, but
one.
We got a little over interested in eyeballs.
It was the topic du jour.
And this podcast is edited by Joseph Tina Medish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Dabuki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.
Jack makes good whiskey, yeah. Red dirt makes good riding roads. The country makes good music for kicking up dust in a taillight glow. Oh, dry wood makes good fires, and good years make good swings, and that's all good, but for me. God makes 5'9" brown eyes in a sundress, loves Tim McGraw in a small town accent. Ain't no way that me and this truck made her fall in love. Jack makes good whiskey, but God makes the good stuff, oh. God makes the good stuff, oh yeah. Jack makes good whiskey, but God makes the good stuff, oh. God makes the good stuff.